Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Okay, well, what happened then? You proceeded with the normal LDS thing after your mission?
Yeah, I started attending a singles ward on the Weber State campus, just south of their big arena there. And just like Jefferson, though I didn't have a girlfriend waiting for me on my mission, but within 4 months of being home, I was engaged. I ended up breaking that engagement off for various reasons, but mostly because I realized I was pushing myself to follow that path that was set. So many young men, when they get back from their mission, it's time to get married. Uh-huh. And I just didn't feel like I was prepared for that. Though I have always wanted children, I've always seen myself as a father. That's been my entire life. You know, all my decisions have been towards that, being, you know, an example to my children and being a good husband. I just didn't feel ready, and so I broke that off, but continued to date, held various callings. I was a gospel principals and gospel doctrine teacher, an award missionary, and kind of continued the really strict lifestyle I had developed before my mission, though I started to have some more progressive views internally. I still didn't really express them, but that all changed as I started taking my science courses. The first class that started to change my views was my zoology classes, in which there was in-depth study of evolution.
Uh-huh.
And I remember my teacher, he was non-LDS, but he must have recognized the fact that most of his students would reject everything he said if he didn't start out the semester appropriately. And so he actually had an article from the BYU Department of Biology in which they acknowledged the validity of evolution, basically,
okay,
and said that it didn't change anything about the LDS perspective on God and the creation, and that essentially it wasn't church's responsibility to describe how it happened, just why it happened, and everything else beyond that. And that was really, it caught me off guard, because I went into this zoology class with a hesitancy to accept anything he said. And then when all of a sudden something is shown to me from BYU, I was forced to kind of give it a chance. And so because of that, I ended up, within a year or two, I began incorporating evolution into my core beliefs. And I became very interested in creation and started just kind of picking and just finding areas where evolution was explained through our scripture, especially in the Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Abraham. There's so much in there that could potentially be tied to evolution, and I found that fascinating. And you know, within that period of time, I was slowly starting to open up about my acceptance of scientific principles and evolution, and sharing little tidbits in my lessons in gospel doctrine or in priesthood where I would tie evolution into the law of chastity, or, for instance, the fact that, you know, the law of chastity was God giving us a little bit of the matter he had created this earth with so that he could test our ability to master it, to control it, so that someday we could become like him and control worlds.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of views I developed, guided a lot by Cleon Skousen and similar authors, that incorporated science. And so that kind of led me to start approaching my views on other things differently, because evolution was despised by so many leaders of the church, both past and present. There are so many comments and quotations on it where, you know, even those who accept it are viewed as stupid and tricked and sinful. And so I approached everything in a different way, because now I knew that leaders could be wrong. Leaders of the church, they were wrong on this. There was so much evidence for this. Why would God place all this evidence here and then expect me to follow, you know, one or two leaders of the church who obviously had no idea about any of it?
Uh-huh.
And so that's where I transitioned into homosexuality. and started to change my approach to deciding how I felt about it.
Excuse me. That sounds funny, but maybe you transitioned to looking at the issue of homosexuality.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I transitioned
anyway.
into...
Just a little funny aside. Okay, but yeah. You started to look at that issue. Okay, so...
Yeah, it just kind of through the same lens, that maybe the leaders who had provided this ultra-strict view and ultra-negative view on homosexuality were wrong, and that maybe, you know, maybe it was okay to view it as normal. And so that kind of started to transition. As kind of a side note, before that, going back to Jefferson's mission... Right when this happened, I was at the peak of believing that Jefferson and I would save our father, and that we would save our family. We had already had other members of our family leave the church, and his girlfriend at the time, you know, as a birthday present, I think she flew me out to visit Jefferson on his mission, and we tracked it together. We spoke to people on the street. I remember we taught a few students in a dorm room. I remember doing a terrible job. I was very rusty, but it was just so great to be out there with him. And there was one experience I remember, and this is probably, if I can call any of my experiences I had in the church, those spiritual confirmation experiences, as I looked at the statue of Joseph Smith and Hiram Smith in front of the Nauvoo Temple, I knew that Jefferson and I would play an important role in benefiting our family and bringing them back. That's how I interpreted it, that we were supposed to save our family.
Uh-huh.
And it was at that same time as I was studying evolution. And then that was kind of all thrown into a tornado of thoughts and perspective as I started to study homosexuality from a scientific perspective, because maybe I didn't have to save our dad. You know, maybe he would be fine anyways, and he wasn't doing such a terrible thing. And so I just did that. If evolution was backed by evidence, then maybe homosexuality was as well. And so I did. I took genetics classes, and other classes in which I researched, you know, inheritance of frequent homosexual characteristics or just different attributes that children of homosexual individuals have. And homosexuality in the animal kingdom, you know, from a broad perspective, and in that time period decided it was normal. This is how they're created, and I don't accept a God that will punish them for acting how they were created. That's essentially the transition I made during this period of time.
Well, this must have impacted your dialogue with your father, certainly, or your...
Yeah, so at this time, I wasn't really opening up about all of this to many people. I was hesitantly bringing it up to some family members and friends as far as evolution goes, but not homosexuality. I was still caught between dedication to the church and its leaders and sustaining them and developing these new attitudes. And so it was still, in my mind, it was still a very personal, private belief. And I felt justified in it as I prayed about it. I felt like it was okay for me to believe differently than the church did on these matters, because maybe I was more prepared. There's so much, you know, so many scriptures that talk about membership not being prepared for things. And so I started to feel maybe this was, you know, I was given these experiences because I was more prepared and I could feel this way and it was okay. I just didn't know how to bring it up with anybody. And so it kind of sat dormant for quite a few years.
Yeah.
And communication with my dad, it improved. I still didn't ask him personal questions by any means. I still didn't feel comfortable with that because we just had never really talked on a personal level about his life. And so all of our conversations were still, what's the weather like there? How's work? Did you have any weird court cases this month? And that was about it. It was terrible looking back at it. Because I didn't still, you know, at the age of 24 or 25, I still didn't know anything about my dad other than that he was no longer a member of the church and he was gay and he was fun to spend time with. That's as far as it went. And so that it didn't really improve much. I eventually, you know, in 2008, when I was 25, I got engaged to a girl I met just through friends and ended up marrying her in the Bountiful Temple. And I remember, you know, talking to my father about it, and I could always hear a little bit of pain. You know, the further I got into activity in the church, the more steps I took, I knew it was harder for him to see. And I just remember him coming up to me at the wedding, at the luncheon, and just holding me and just sobbing as he hugged me and just told me how much he loved me and how proud he was of me and that I was everything he ever wanted his sons to be. And yeah. It was really hard just hearing him express that stuff, because it was just so much, it was so far beyond the conversations we had had before.
Yeah.
Just not superficial anymore. And so that's kind of the peak of where our relationship was at that point. It really didn't start to improve until the day that I told him I had left the church.
But meanwhile, when you got married, you were at a point where you were empathetic towards him, where you were in a place of not judging him. You were still very Mormon, you were still very believing, but you had at least some nuanced ideas at this point about evolution and about homosexuality, which you could take at least in your feelings about your father.
Yeah, for about the first year after I got married, I slowly quickly in that year transitioned from not saying anything about it to becoming confident thanks to Facebook. I still was nervous to talk about it in person, but Facebook, you know, granted me the same confidence it does everybody,
yeah,
which can sometimes lead to big problems. But I started to post things. I started to express frustration with leaders of the church who said things that I felt were going to contribute to suicides or contribute to a stigma about homosexuality.
Uh-huh.
And my family did not like that. My extended family and friends did not like that at all. At one point, my ex-wife, she agreed with me, but then because of pressures from her family, told me she didn't want to talk about it anymore. And so it was kind of a painful process for me to start supporting the cause for gay rights and for acceptance. But my dad noticed it, and I know he, you know, multiple times he sent me messages and told me how happy it made him to see me, you know, showing these, you know, these feelings and beliefs.
No, yeah, what a nice message. I mean, yeah. you know, to actually feel some support from his son after all this time, that must have been really touching to him.
Yeah, and I remember, you know, vividly the first few conversations we had about evolution and hearing some surprise in his voice, and especially when I expressed frustration with, you know, leadership of the church and things they had said. And so it kind of transitioned gradually from me being frustrated about evolution and then being frustrated about homosexuality and posting things about leaders causing more damage than doing good. And then gradually because of those two things, I finally approached some of the reasons investigators in Seattle had left the church or decided not to be baptized. And then many of the reasons that my family had left, mostly Jefferson, who had, you know, like he said, left just shortly after his mission.
So by this time, Jefferson had left. By the time you got married, he had left?
Yeah. When I met my ex-wife, we were living actually together up in Ogden, and he had left, and I was still very active in the church.
Was that kind of traumatic for you after being so bonded around that?
Yeah. In fact, I recently just wrote a letter. We've got a dialogue going on with our extended family about the frustrations of us leaving and some of the negativity that they've felt. Our grandma actually expressed a lot of sorrow for the things that we say and just some of the things we share. And there's been a lot of commentary on us becoming bad people, negative people, serving Satan, dark people. Just a lot of our own family members have been expressing that as we've opened up more about fighting things you view as dangerous and harmful. And in the response letter I just sent, I shared the story of how many family members I had seen leave the church before I approached it. In fact, every member of my family, my immediate genetic family, we're in a combined family now, but my three older sisters, my dad, my mom, and Jefferson, my younger brother, had all either left or expressed serious doubts in the church years before I did. And going back to that experience in front of the statue of Joseph Smith and Hiram Smith, it was incredibly traumatic when, you know, Jefferson came to me and told me that he no longer believed in the church or believed in that mission that I felt we had together. And I shared this with our family to show them that I understand how it feels to see somebody leave the church, and I understand the pain that that causes, but that now being on this other side of the spectrum, I recognize that it, you know, that change has nothing to do with the goodness of a person at all, and that it took me a while to realize that, and that it's, you know, it's now painful for them. It's now painful, just as painful as it was to see family members leaving. To me personally, and I know this isn't the perspective of many people, but I feel that same pain when I see family members staying. And so it's been an interesting transition, but that experience of Jefferson leaving, you know, his doubts and him coming to me, he was hesitant to say why he left. He didn't, our whole family, anytime anybody left, they didn't want to influence other members of our family to leave. In fact, our dad made a promise to our mom when we were very young that he would never talk negatively about the church, and he never did, not a single time, and he still is hesitant, minus Facebook. he's still hesitant to speak negatively about it. But it was Jefferson's questions. I asked him, I said, no, I want you to send me a list of problems you have with the church. And I went into it knowing that I would prove him wrong and that I would show him that he was viewing it from a false perspective and that he needed to come back, and it just didn't happen that way. All of his concerns were valid and all of my family members were valid, and so that really threw me for a loop, and I ended up it was just over a year and a half ago, I ended up telling everybody slowly that I had stopped believing and that I had left the church.
Really, your shift from belief to disbelief, even though you had nuanced it already, was when you actually had your family members point out the details as to what changed their belief system, and that impacted you because you had felt that you had to consider those issues.
Yeah, there were many things that were said to me on my mission that troubled me, things I hadn't ever visited. I just didn't give them the time. I dismissed them immediately on the doorsteps. Things like the Adam God theory, the teaching of that, the Mountain Meadow Massacre, Joseph Smith and the plural marriage, marrying of young women. All those things, I never approached those things. I dismissed them automatically. And the combination of, you know, evolution and homosexuality, those were the main factors that led towards it. But then the combination of those things with what always sat in the back of my mind for my mission, and then what I was trying to prove wrong about my family members' views, once I realized that they actually had valid points, I stopped attending church, though I still was struggling to believe in it. I stopped attending church, and I didn't go for about 8 months, and tried to go back once or twice, and just while I was there, realized that I no longer believed. I didn't fit in anymore. And I remember specifically telling Jefferson when he told me he was leaving that if I ever left, that was it. There wasn't going to be anything out there better than the LDS Church and the belief system they had are more comprehensive. And I always knew that would be the case, and it was. I had no desire to seek out another church or religion. I just went straight from activity to a period of non-activity and then to agnosticism.
Yeah. So tell me the fallout of that, you know, in your life of your... I'm going to take your story ahead of Jefferson's and come back to Jefferson again, but what was the most immediate aftermath of leaving the church then?
It was somewhat of a private decision for me. I didn't make it known to many family members directly. It was sort of something they gradually saw in me. But immediately to me, just like, you know, John DeLynn in that the video that he created, Why People Leave the Church, I watched that as I was questioning, and what he said about your world being turned upside down was 100% true for me. Everything I ever planned on was gone, and having been somebody who looked so forward to children and a family, I was terrified about how I would raise children, how I would get them involved, you know, what types of traditions our family would have, how would I develop a good relationship with my kids. All of that stuff was terrifying to me. But at the same time, there was an immediate liberation where I felt like for the first time I could decide. It was very confidence boosting to realize that I was capable 100% of raising a family successfully without somebody else telling me how to do it. And so it was incredibly painful, but then also incredibly an optimistic view. As far as the fallout with my family, obviously I had the support of my immediate family, including, you know, our stepfather and our step-siblings, who the majority of them are still very active in the church. They've been absolutely amazing as far as listening to us, remaining our Facebook friends despite our incredibly upset posts, if that's a thing. They've just been great, and it's really been a different experience with our extended family. Like I mentioned before, you know, a lot of the things that we've shared have caused people to refer to me and Jefferson as bad people, negative, upset, incapable of letting go, and the worst, you know, being serving Satan. It was one used recently. And so there's still so much negativity.
If I can just, this is Jefferson, if I can just jump in for 1 second.
Yeah.
My favorite title that I've been given so far is the darkened testator of the homosexual cause.
Say that again? I'm not even sure I got that. The darkened testator?
One I'm most proud of.
Testator. What's a testator? Sounds kinky. I don't know.
Yeah, there have been some interesting names thrown out there. We've been told that if we prefer these views, that we'd be better off living with the apes. I've been told that I'm obsessed with gays. A lot of things you wouldn't think you would expect from Latter-day Saints. And so it's just been very interesting to see the reaction.
A curiosity factor. If it's your extended family, is it more your dad's side? So are these his nieces and nephews, or is this more?
It's more
farther.
It's more our mom's side. We have a few of them on our dad's side. Our aunts and uncles, definitely, they're much older than he is, and so they're not very involved on Facebook, which is the forum we typically use. Jefferson, his blogging, but there are a lot of family members on our mom's side who we discuss things with, or we try to discuss things with on a regular basis. And admittedly, at first, you know, from my perspective, there was a lot of frustration, and I didn't censor what I said. And so there were some words used on my part, like ignorant. That was probably the strongest one I chose to use on a regular basis. But there's some justification there for their reaction. But now that we've tried to, or at least I've tried to take, Jefferson's always been very, very good at being sympathetic in his writing and not coming off too abrasive. I've had a harder time with it, but now that I'm really focusing on that, it's getting better, and the dialogue with our family is improving, but there's still so many of them that just view us as Satan's helpers.
Yeah. Well, let's come to your marriage. I mean, it sounds like there was an impact of your faith transition that really impacted your marriage too. Do you want to give a little time with that?
Yeah. When I first was married, I married a very young woman. I was 26 when we got married, and she was 19. We're both actually still on good terms. We still communicate and are still concerned for the well-being of the other. But when we were first married, there was a lot of pressure, like there is with every LDS marriage or relationship, to get married once you feel like it's the right thing, and not hold off, not let anything slow you down so that you don't mess up. And I was always very strict with myself, and we actually did postpone the wedding because we got a little too close, and I was not going to allow myself to go to the temple having done anything even close to fornication, quote unquote. And so we postponed it, and we worked with our bishop, and there was a lot of guilt for that, the postponing of our wedding. And my ex-wife all along was holding in hesitancy to get married in the whole first place, not because she didn't want to get married, but because she just felt too young. She didn't feel ready for it. And so just a week into our marriage, in our first sacrament meeting together, she broke down and started crying. And we went home, and I asked her what had happened, and she just said she wasn't ready. And so from the very beginning, our marriage was sort of on a stagnant plane as we tried to figure out if she really wanted to be married. And it got to the point where, you know, she would come to me and ask if we got divorced and she was able to do the things she had planned out of high school, if she could come back and we could get married afterwards. And so there were a lot of interesting talks. I essentially became a counselor willingly. I was fine with her opening up about her feelings. I never took it personally. And we were working through this. And then as soon as I brought my doubts into the equation, and as soon as her parents found out about my mom's doubts, everything changed from that point on. Her mother completely stopped contacting my mom. They were fairly close. They didn't do a lot of things together, but they communicated on a regular basis up until that point.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as I had opened up to my ex-wife about it and asked her to not tell anybody, her parents did find out from her, and everything went downhill. All of their positive views of me were gone overnight. I was no longer capable of raising a family in righteousness. I was going to be a bad influence, and it was time for her to really question whether or not she wanted to be with me. And so it completely stopped all talk of us working out what we were working on so hard, and just essentially sent our relationship over a cliff. And to her, the thought of raising children in a mixed belief home was not possible. There would be no leeway. There would be no question. They would be attending church, and that I would be attending church, no matter how I felt. And I said, I responded that I just couldn't do that. I wouldn't be able to do it honestly. And there was one thing I would never do to my children or my wife, and that's lie to them on such a regular basis. And so we just decided that it was best if she moved on with her life, did all the things she wanted to anyways, and if I moved on with mine and tried to find, you know, both happiness, tried to find my way, first of all, I had no idea what I was going to do, just leaving the church.
Well, let me just talk about her for a second. I mean, I can't analyze her situation, but it sure seems like she had really sacrificed her youth, you know, to get married so young, to follow the church. And so in a way, it was kind of like your mother. She was married out of sort of bad advice, which is to get married so young, right? But then the only reason to really work for this was to obey the church. And if sort of that was pulled out from under her by your leaving the church, and now her parents were going to give her permission to get divorced, you know, in a sense, it makes sense that she would, you know, exercise that option now that she has it, you know, even if you take what her feelings might be for you out of it.
Yeah, no, and that's a very valid parallel. She definitely was, there was a lot of pressure. It's taught to young women as soon as they gain interest in boys that they're to look for a member of the church to marry in the temple who will be a good priesthood holder and raise, you know, and lead their family in righteousness. And that wasn't going to be me anymore in her mind. And well, at first in her parents' mind and then in hers. And so it was just best if we both started our lives fresh, pursuing the path she wanted and the new path I was starting. And so it really was, you know, we made it public together. We expressed a lot of appreciation for each other, for all that we had done for one another, and expressed the fact that we still cared about each other deeply and wanted the best for each other. There was never any negativity. In retrospect, there's always negative experiences, and a lot of that actually contributed to my anger at first about the church, and it was mostly having to do with her family.
Uh-huh.
And the typical Utah Mormon stereotype, you know, became something that I tended to attack on a regular basis, and it was based on her parents, and that's where all the, you know, the pain from that situation comes from. None exists as far as the decision to get married and the divorce, and there never has been any there. So,
well, you have a couple of nice parallels to your parents, which are that you learned from your parents how to at least not carry bitterness against each other, or, you know, forget the friendship you did have when you were married. And I suspect you also, that this also really gave you a parallel to understanding your dad's experience when he left the church.
Yeah.
I mean, you didn't leave because you were gay, but this ostracization you kind of felt, at least over there, must have given you some empathy.
Yeah.
Maybe from here, let's just go back to Jefferson for just a minute. We have you both, although these are not the same time, but I brought you both to where you left the church. But let's go back to Jefferson just a minute, and let's get us back so that we're at least temporally in the same moment. And during this period, you left a couple years before Nathan, right?
Yeah, I left in early 2006.
Yeah. So what I want to ask you is, you know, besides telling us if there's anything relevant about those 2 years in your journey, but specifically, it sounds like you were using that time partly to also develop a relationship with your father. And so would you go back? You never really talked about your interactions with your father on your mission and after your mission and through this faith transition. And so would you both catch us up on these 2 years between when you and Nathan left the church, and also what kind of things happened in your relationship with your father in that time and on your mission? You know, how was this playing into the role?
Yeah, definitely. I guess just to follow the interactions I had with my dad regarding his homosexuality, when I was 17, I had been fasting and praying about what I should do to help my dad, and came to the conclusion that I needed to just talk to him about it. So I fasted again when he came and was visiting Utah one time. We were in our grandma's house, and all the kids were there, and I had a Book of Mormon prepared with some scriptures highlighted for him, some of my favorite ones, and we hadn't talked about why he had left or anything at this point. I was under the impression, you know, under the mistake impression that he had chosen homosexuality as like that it was a choice. Point is, I asked if we could have a moment to talk alone. So we went off on our own, and I said, you know, that I'd never heard why he had left, and I want to understand why he had left the church. So it was kind of an interesting question. Didn't have anything to do with, in my mind, homosexuality. It was kind of like, why did you leave the church? And I thought maybe the homosexuality was kind of a result of that, but of him leaving the church. So that was the first one. And he, in accordance with his promise to my mom, didn't get into any specifics. He said, I can't talk about, you know, any of the specific reasons why I left, but he gave me a few things. While on my mission, I continued to think a lot about him.
Were you corresponding?
Yeah. Yeah, we'd send letters. And I'd say probably not as often as Nate described him and Dad did, but we definitely did send letters to each other. An interesting change happened from before my mission to after, which was before, just like Nathan, I didn't talk about my dad being gay with anybody. The first conversation I had with somebody, about him was my girlfriend before I left on my mission. And we had been looking at this photo album and talking about, you know, my family and stuff like that. And towards the end, she asked me why my parents had been divorced. And there was a moment of long silence before I finally said, you know, I haven't talked about this with anybody, but my dad's gay, and we talked about a few things then. On my mission, the first time I talked about it with somebody after my girlfriend was an investigator. She was an atheist, but had been looking in the church for a while. I was out on my mission for maybe 3 months at this point. She was very sincere in her pursuit of the church. I don't know what had happened with the missionaries before, but somehow very interested in the church, and she did end up actually getting baptized later. But
okay.
Her having this conversation, discussion on whatever gospel principle we were, and she was just being silent. She was quiet. She normally wasn't. She was very involved in it. And finally, my companion asked her, what's on your mind? And she said she was at church this last week, and she was given a pamphlet, I think, the family pamphlet, Proclamation of the Family, and she'd heard something said by a member, and she just said, I know a lot of gay couples, and they have more love in their relationships than a lot of the straight couples that I know, so I don't know how to deal with that. And my companion, stumbled over the question for a few minutes, didn't really know what to do, and then I broke in and said, I'm going to tell you guys something that I don't want to leave this room. You have to promise me it's not going to leave this room. And I started crying, and it was really difficult. This was obviously something that I needed to talk about that I hadn't talked about with anybody before. And my mouth does this annoying thing where it turns upside down and my throat kind of constricts and my voice sounds weird when it gets really emotional. But, I just said my dad's gay and just talked about our family and talked about it quite a bit and how I didn't think he could be fully happy. That was kind of the theme of my justification for why it was bad, was that you can't live a fully happy life because it's not in accordance with the gospel. And she asked me a pointed question, which surprisingly no one had ever asked me before, which was simply, why don't you think your dad could be happy? And I answered it and moved on. But that was the second time I'd ever talked about my dad with anybody. Yeah. Now it's completely free. I can't have known you for 30 seconds. So anyway, my dad was, just for my relationship with my dad was on my mind, or my dad in general, on my mission. We did send some letters, just like Nate did, but I think I only sent him one or two letters where I said, tell me about homosexuality. And we didn't really have our conversations until after I got back from my mission. And I sort of tried to come to an understanding of homosexuality on my own first before approaching him. I was praying about it one day and felt, all right, it's time for me to come to terms with this to see how I should approach homosexuality. The biggest thing in my mind was, what would I counsel my child to do? And that was always something I thought about with my doubts of the church as well. So if I have a child, I'm not going to lie to him. I'm not going to tell him, and I'm not going to give him something that's going to cause him problems. So if they come to me with doubts about the church, I want to get those resolved before I'm married, before I have children, because I will be honest with my kids. And same thing, if I have a gay child, what am I going to tell them to do? Am I going to give them advice that's going to damage them and make them increase their chances of suicide or not being a healthy person or whatever? I want to give them the gift of something that's going to help them. So I thought it's time that I come to terms with this. And so this was before I'd left the church, but I was back from my mission. And I met a guy in one of my classes. He was obviously gay, just kind of the way he talked and dressed and stuff. So I approached him after class and said, hey, my dad's gay and I'm trying to understand it more. He invited me to a North Star meeting, which I went to. And there I met this guy. He was a professor at BYU named Jim Burrell. He had a gay son and he was speaking at this fireside. So I was really challenged at this time of this kind of liberal Mormon approach to homosexuality, especially as epitomized by Jim Burrell.
So this was a North Star presentation, but the message there that you got was what exactly?
Was one of acceptance, one of it's okay to be gay and be a member of the church. I did not know how to interpret that. It's
okay.
Yeah, and it seemed to me at the time that they were straining to reinterpret doctrine so that it would justify, or not necessarily justify, but straining to reinterpret it to match their lifestyle. And so
But did you get the impression that North Star was about living a gay lifestyle or was about accepting your homosexuality but suppressing the actions? What was your impression of North Star? Based on that, I guess you had a limited engagement with them. But
yeah, my impression of the group from reading stuff online was that it was, this is a place, an open place to come and talk about it, but it doesn't make it okay to to be gay still, to act on your homosexuality. But
okay, so that's a little bit consistent with what I expect from North Star. But then you're telling me you're, at least in that fireside, you came with kind of a different message, which was it's actually okay to have a gay lifestyle, or which is, under good quotations, means have a same-sex relationship or a partner of some type. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. So the guy who happened to speak at that particular fireside that I went to was very liberal in his
mind. Okay.
So
probably beyond what North Star really is at, this particular speaker.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I met with him quite a few times after that, and trying to interpret homosexuality within a Mormon framework, and as a very much more conservative and orthodox person myself in my faith. So, So I was following the same model I did with evangelicalism, which was just to have open dialogues with people. The same model I had seen in How Wide the Divide and Bridging the Divide. And so I met with people and just to go experience it and expose myself to these things to broaden my perspective, all in an effort to understand homosexuality within a Mormon framework. So that was kind of that time. Then once I left the church, I felt, and I wrote about this in my journal the day that I left, but it was a huge weight off of me to not have to try to interpret new information based on what the church believed, but rather to receive new information and decide whether I believed it or not based on its own merit alone. And so that had to do with doctrines about grace specifically. You know, that was a big one. It also had to do with evolution and politics. Everything that religion touches on, I could now accept without having to first think about what the church thought, and also homosexuality. So then I reapproached it later in a very different way, basically without the church, without having that requirement or that thought that I needed to understand homosexuality but still think it was wrong.
Uh-huh.
Once I left, I didn't see any reason to not just accept it. And so I just accepted it. It's fine, it's normal, and it's okay.
How did that play out in your relationship with your dad then?
It was great. The first time when I felt like I started to have a deeper relationship with my dad besides just birthday cards and calls and stuff was when he visited and we were driving in the car, and I don't think I had even told him that I had left the church yet. He probably had heard some stuff, but maybe he had. I think I had talked to him on the phone, but anyway. And we just talked about it, and there's that solidarity you get when someone has gone through something very similar. And so we talked a lot about the issues and just had a long conversation about that. But also, for the first time in my life, I could ask him not questions about homosexuality, like why are you gay, or you know, why did you leave, or something like that, but rather what is it like? And really, because I now dropped the pretense, the need to convert him, and now I could just try to understand him without any hidden agenda or requirement. So all of our walls were down and we finally were able to just talk about stuff, and that was great.
Yeah.
And really satisfying, and just could be real with each other. So
that was the start of your adult relationship with your father, which has turned into a very positive thing for both of you, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So does that bring us up to date, basically? I mean, was this around the time that, you know, this had time to sort of arrive at that point by the time Nathan had his faith crisis?
Yeah, I guess the other thing I should comment on is Nathan and I lived with each other in the same apartment while I was slowly becoming agnostic and then atheist, and then while he was still a member. And so just to kind of give the background towards how I transitioned, I was went to an evangelical church for a while, a non-denominational church, and tried to reinterpret my faith, and it didn't work. And so then I really just escaped into the world of fantasy for about a year. Literally, I played World of Warcraft all the time and read fantasy books, but I was just escaping into another world where the issues were clear and easy. There were bad guys, there were good guys, and didn't think about any of these deep things for about a year. And Nate and I didn't talk about them. We only talked once really about it, which was the day he was moving out of the apartment. We went to a restaurant, and I finally showed him some scriptures of this, you know, some of the stuff that had challenged me and stuff like that. We had a relationship, but it was not anything to do with Mormonism, and Then I just woke up one day and realized I was agnostic and didn't believe in God, and I was okay with it. And then I realized I was actually just atheist, but that I was healthy and happy and much more consistent of a person than I was before, and that I think brings us up to date.
Okay. Well, then let's just let you both talk freely now. I think we've had enough time to get used to your voices, and so I think if we, you know, let's just talk about what's happened since, what's happened to your family, what's happened to your relationship with your father especially, and what's happened with, you've talked a little bit about your relationship with your still believing family, but if you have more to say about that, about what's gone well, what's gone right, if there's more that you have about that anyway, but.
Yeah, it's been interesting going back to, you know, where I had gotten through my divorce. This is back in April or March of 2010. Jefferson and I, we moved back into a house together with our other cousin. And it was with the understanding that I had left the church, but I was still very committed to certain principles and that those would never be challenged. And that I still, there were just so many things about, you know, some of the things that Jefferson had become comfortable with that I wasn't. And so it was still an interesting difference there. But eventually our relationship as brothers became, you know, solidified again. It really had taken a hit when he left. I really distanced myself and really lamented that. And gradually, even before I left, we started to repair that. And it was never negative. It was just not there. We just didn't really talk much. And So we moved in together, had a lot of great talks. Now, just like he said with, you know, him and our dad, there was just so much agreement there now, finally, and a lot of honesty for the first time. You know, one of the struggles that I've had with our family, our extended family, and with family members that have been really upset with us, is that I feel like there's such a necessity of covering faults within the church. And I don't necessarily think that's the fault of the leadership or anything. I think it's something that members tend to do to themselves to overanalyze things and to hold themselves accountable for things they probably don't need to. I was guilty of that myself as a member. I had so many standards that were beyond what I needed. And so the discussion with our family, as we've tried to open their minds to the perspectives we've gained on homosexuality and on scientific matters and things like that, and on women's rights as well, there's been some of that. I've really noticed and I've really felt a lot of frustration about the hesitancy of family members to agree that there are even some things that are being said that are bad within the church. There's a need to kind of cover up honest evaluation of the church. And so it's gotten, you know, as far as our conversation with our family, I feel like we've both made a pretty intense effort to influence the opinions of our family members on these topics. And at first it was met with a lot of anger, a lot of name calling and frustration. Then I think it was met with the ignore button. Most of them just, I think, don't read what we write, or at least what I write. Like I said, he's always done a much better job with his blogs of painting a sympathetic picture of his views and his dialogue. But now I think it's developing into where we're trying to let them know we understand. We understand that it really sucks to watch us leave, and that we've been there. And we just want you guys to understand, you know, where we're coming from, that it's particularly hard for us to see our family members, you know, support statements that paint such a terrible picture of homosexuality or continue to allow the belittling of women to occur. Things like that, you know, we've really tried to influence them that way and start a dialogue with them. And it's been pretty rocky so far, but
But is it fair for me to say that you're not trying to lead them out of the church, but you're trying to lead them at least from these problematic opinions that a lot of church members hold, that's at least culturally part of the church, if not doctrinally?
Well, it's... Go ahead, Jeff.
Oh, I think we come from two perspectives. I think Nate's always been very upfront about his desire that if people leave the church, that he'll be happy about that.
Okay.
And I have to admit that I would be too soon because of some of the destructive things. But if some of that can be redefined within their framework of faith so that they're accepting and that doesn't have these negative effects, then I'm okay with that too. But anyway, maybe I'll let Nate redefine how he would say that. But
well, it's important to come back to that. I don't know if we're at a good place, but because I think we both know that there's a difference between being happy that someone left the church than really devaluing their experience if they're staying in the church, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Or disrespecting it. And I think I'm assuming that you guys understand that nuance because you've told me that you have a good relationship with your true believing brothers and sisters who are, or at least your stepbrother and sisters and your stepfather. And that makes me think that they have to feel respected by you as well, or else you probably wouldn't have that good of a relationship. Am I correct?
Definitely, yeah. It's been an interesting mix because our comments and our arguments against the church have really only been about against certain stances and certain statements.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, Jefferson, you know, is right when he says, you know, I've joked about it and I've been very honest with people that based on my experience, I feel like they would be happier outside of the church. But if anything, if, you know, my ultimate goal in posting things about gay rights and in posting things, you know, statements about, you know, homosexuality by church leaders and offering my criticism, my goal in that is to help them see that it's okay to view the statements of your leaders and the things that have said both, you know, past and present with skepticism. It's okay to go into it with a personal search for what works and what's right. And that's probably the biggest reason we've gotten along so well with, you know, the members of our immediate family and our step family is that they're so willing to talk about those things.
Yeah. Tell me what they've done right specifically that gives you so much respect for them in spite of the fact that you fundamentally disagree about the church.
Well, first of all, our character hasn't been forgotten as we've left the church and as we've changed our stances on so many things. They still will let us know they disagree with us on certain points, but then at the same time say, I don't want you to think that I view you as a bad person for feeling this way. I just happen to disagree. So there's been that dialogue that just does not exist with a lot of our extended family. It's a very uh-huh. negative conversation in which there's always a sort of pain and insult attached to comments.
Yeah.
But
so maybe part of that is that these people really do know you. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, part of it's probably it's in their nature to be respectful. And that's probably a culture that pervades your family, including your step family.
Yeah.
And part of it's probably that they know you and they know they can't possibly know you and believe that you're not being sincere and that see you as being so inspired by Satan, you know?
Yeah.
Am I guessing? Is that correct?
That's exactly right. They still see us. And it's the same with them. You know, we always try to let our family members know that even if we do get heated in a conversation, it's rare to find Jefferson and I specifically calling our family members bad people for still believing a certain way. We might say you need to spend some more time looking into this, but it's, you know, that's often not returned. And so remembering who we are, that's definitely one of the strengths that our family has. Along with that, they're capable of talking about things they haven't thought about before and actually admitting that they haven't really looked into it. You know, and they're very thoughtful about ways to get around the current problems between religion and social issues. And just as an example, obviously our mom and our stepdad talk a lot about these things. Our mom is very, very open and very honest about things that bother her nowadays. And one of the things they've talked about on a regular basis is the question of gay marriage. And when you compare, you know, our stepfather's reaction to it and his solution to the dialogue we have with some of our extended family, it's completely different. He's not trying at all to say that the things like that gay marriage will lead to the decline of society, or that it'll lead to animal marriage and all these other things. Those arguments are never on his table. It's always very sophisticated.
Yeah, and that's the same with David and his children, is that they, it's interesting because when we were in the church, at least I looked at David and thought he wasn't faithful enough. Like, he wasn't strict enough. And now I see that as one of his strengths, is that he was always able to interpret his own faith the way that he felt that it needed to be interpreted. And so that's enabled him and his children to have a more loving and accepting relationship with us, and it's been a great result.
Yeah, no, that's really nice. And I mean, while maintaining their activity, maintaining their temple recommends, I mean, they're definitely Mormons, but they're Mormons who are able to really have maintain their connection with their former Mormon family members.
Yes.
And that's important for my audience, partly because a lot of my audience is having to deal with the gay people in the family who might separate from the church. And it's really very similar in that way, right? That there's different ways a believing member can approach their relationship with their gay family members and also with their formerly believing family members. And so it's nice to hear an example of a family that manage this with a big segment of their family. It just so happens that all the ones who are biologically, you know, on your side are the ones that left, and pretty much the ones on their side left. But it sounds like you're very close to all of them in spite of the fact that you were a merged family.
Yeah, and, you know, it's been an interesting reaction by them when we talk about stuff. And, like, I started the blog this last year in 2012. Just started in April or so, discussing why I left the church. And their reaction to those posts have been, thank you for sharing this, and because they didn't understand. So they like to understand our perspective because they love us and because they're close to us. Whereas the reaction to others sometimes have been, why don't you just leave it be? So they've definitely welcomed the conversation.
Yeah. So can we just spend a few more minutes and just update us on how your relationship, both of your relationships with your father has evolved in this, you know, these past 2 years that you've had, where basically you're out no longer restrained, at least by your Mormonism, in your relationship with him. And you also had this camaraderie about a now common experience of being outside of the church, but having a family inside the church. Just do you mind both telling me where that's gone, how that's developed, what that might mean to him and to you, and what you've done? And
It's really been great, just to be able to finally open up with him. The depth of our conversations has just improved dramatically from, you know, what I mentioned earlier, just talking about the weather and how his court cases were going, to now where we're asking him about relationships. We're asking him about his health and how life is going, how he's feeling, what he does on the weekend. And that's just recently for me. It's within, you know, the last year where I've finally felt the freedom and the comfort to talk to him about those things and to really get to know him on a personal level. And it's really been amazing. I've still sensed some surprise and even hesitancy on his side to talk about him because it's just something we haven't practiced. It's something that hasn't occurred. And so it's somewhat awkward at first to talk about certain things when we're, you know, for the first time, Jefferson, myself, and our dad are, you know, just sitting down in a bar to just talk and just have a good time. And we realize that three returned missionaries, one who is gay, one who is married and divorced, is now an agnostic, and one who's an atheist, like, we've all come so far, but now we're on the same level in so many ways. It was a very surreal experience, and to just be with there and get to know him. And it's just been really amazing over the last year to be able to really see him for who he is and see what his life is all about.
Yeah.
It kind of accumulated at the experience that Nate just described of us sitting in the bar and chatting was after the Gay Pride Parade here in Austin a few months ago. And like I said about how reticent I was to talk about it and how that's changed and how open we all are now to this thing. And so it's kind of symbolized by us just all walking down the street together in the Gay Pride Parade.
So what happened? He came to Austin for the Gay Pride Parade.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
Okay. So he came to do the Gay Pride with you.
Yeah.
That must have been nice for him.
And before, earlier in that day, him and I had gone to a park, and there were a lot of gay people who would come into the area. And so we were at the park and just chatting and about everything. And but anyway, just a public display of not only acceptance for him and for homosexuality, but also a pride for him, and that we were proud to be with him and proud to be the children of a gay man.
Yeah. Well, you guys, well, that must have really meant a lot to him. If it was me, I would have been completely overblown to walk with my two sons in that, you know, after that journey. So
yeah, it got fairly emotional at some points. I know at one point all of us were at least tearing up and then kind of laughing about it. But it was just a really neat experience to be there with him. And it's, in retrospect, it's so hard to see how long it took to just overcome, you know, so many things that we'd kind of, feelings we'd developed over time without really talking to him, with just talking to other people. And, you know, and just kind of getting back to where I think both of us were initially when we found out that he was gay. It didn't impact us at all. It didn't bother us. It didn't change how we acted around him. And then to finally get back to that, you know, 17 years later, is I'm just incredibly, feel very fortunate that it's happened. And he, you know, he's expressed the same. You know, our mother has also, despite, you know, lingering feelings of pain from everything that happened, and still a lot of frustration with our dad for decisions that he made because, you know, because of the pressures he was under, she's still been very supportive of our relationship with our dad. And even, you know, recently spoke to me about the fact that our journey as his sons to kind of repair, you know, any damage that had been done with our relationship has helped her to finally let go of that aspect of her anger and completely eliminate the frustration she had with the issue of homosexuality. I can't even begin to fathom how it felt from her perspective. And I'm so excited to hear when she's interviewed, but I can understand that for years, you know, her experience would make it difficult to let go of negativity regarding our father's homosexuality. And she's just mentioned how free she feels now, and that she's really grateful that we've been so open with her and so honest, and that now she's just very excited for where everything's going.
Yeah. Well, that's excellent. Well, I want to talk, we're kind of getting toward the end, but I just want to, something that really comes to my mind are all the paradoxes that sort of came out of this. The big one is this, you know, this idea, Jefferson, that your mother had this dream that was, you know, sort of prophetic on the one hand. On the other hand, you don't believe in prophetic dreams, you know, and the irony that your father faces and your mother, that both of them, you know, the best thing in their life for them is these five children they had together, but it came at such a huge, with a huge amount of pain, and it's something that they wouldn't suggest to anyone. Meanwhile, they're, you know, on this other hand, super glad they did it because of this particular outcome. How does that sort of, those kind of things play with your head, Jefferson, this business of your life purpose being this premonition that your mother had? Do you guys?
Yeah. And this was something my mom has brought up to me a number of times over the years, is because she almost has somewhat of a hurt that I've cast that off. Like I said, I just don't know what to do with it. All I can really go off is my own experiences and the things that I felt and the things I feel confident about. And so I don't know what to make of it. I know that regardless of how difficult it's been and how I might have had a different youth with a father in the home, I have no clue what kind of person I'd be. But I am I'm grateful in hindsight for the positive pressure that it had on me to have a gay father, because I think most people, when they within the bubble of Utah, without meeting people who are homosexual or knowing them or whatever, they understand this issue on a different level, which is a cognitive one, and it's one of if it's an argumentative one, and it's a dogmatic one that is completely changed when they love someone who is gay or whatever the issue may be. You know, you look at Republicans who had been anti-gay for years and in their policies that changed once their daughter came out of the closet, because it takes away all the prejudice and all the easy answers, which is to say, oh, this person chose this, or they're sinful, they're evil. Now they're a real person, and they're a person that you love and you respect. And so it forced me to come to a more mature understanding of this issue and also a lot of other issues. So,
yeah. And do you have something to add to that, Nathan?
Just to kind of go off of, you know, what he said, that it's just kind of to tie back into what I mentioned earlier, that part of the reason we've become so vocal about this is because obviously we've experienced what he just mentioned, that we've had a loved one that seriously challenged, whose existence challenged the things that we were being told about gay people. And to me, it's just not good enough for that to be the only way that people come to that conclusion. And I don't think it is, but I think it's one of the most successful ways. And I want so badly for open dialogue, like what you're trying to start here, and which has been going on for, you know, a long time with Mormon Stories. I want people to see that it's something that they need to approach, and they need to develop an actual personal opinion on, rather than just taking what is taught to them and told to them. And, you know, going back to the fact that I've always been open about my experience, and that, you know, I think people will be happy experiencing things the way I have. I was the same way as a Mormon missionary. I went off of experience and I told them, I know that you'll experience happiness, you know, if you believe these things. That's exactly, I'm still the same missionary today. And I still want people to realize that life is just better when you're able to be a loving person all the way, and you're not tied to any of these negative feelings about homosexual people. You're able to actually love completely. And, you know, I was able to reconcile acceptance of homosexuality with a belief in the LDS Church for quite a while. You know, I happened to look more into other things that eventually led me out of the church, but it doesn't necessarily have to. And it is possible, it's very possible, and many people that we all know are still part of the church and are helping to shape the direction that the church moves in. And that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I just hope that more people will get involved, and that more people will start talking about it and start being willing to communicate about it.
Okay. Then as our last theme that I want to touch on, I just want to ask you, what is it that you kept from Mormonism? And I really, Jefferson, I especially want you to talk about your, because I first really, the reason that I'm talking to you today is because of your blog, The Weekend Philanthropist, which I find so inspiring, because it's, I hope everyone will look at it. He's really got a project that is really discussing ways that anyone, an ordinary person, can really improve their communities or get engaged in a good cause. And just pointing out that there's, you don't have to pack up your bags and go to Africa to do service to humanity. He's looking for ways that are realistic and describing them. But he's doing it because it's his passion, and he's doing it because his conscience calls him to it, but also because he sees it as how he needs to live his life. But both of you, I hear this from you, that you have these deep compassion for humans. You have this deep connection with the message of love. And so even though, Nathan, you're agnostic, and Jefferson, you're atheist, to me that came out of your that was the part of your religion that it isn't unique to Mormonism, but there are certainly people who find that there, and I'm guessing that you must have found it there because that was where you came into your religious life or your moral life. Do you have something to say about that?
Yeah, from when I was young, I think the ideals that are taught in the church are to serve and to love other people, and that living a selfish life is to live a sad life. And so to focus on other people and help uplift people is a great thing. And I remember from when I was young thinking about, and I had kind of idealistic ideas about what I was going to be able to do, but I had this passion and this dream that I wanted to first become a billionaire, which was going to be easy for me because for some reason, and then I was going to go into another country and a third world country and start a business that would pay people good wages and then raise the economics of the area and all this stuff. And so this was kind of an idea I had before, but that desire to do something important.
While the other kids were wanting to be rock stars and movie stars, your, you know, grandiose ambition, which we all have when we're kids, was to become rich and important, but in a way that could help other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in the wake of leaving the church, in the church, you're given a lot of purpose. You're told that you're here for a reason at this specific time and that you're doing this great work on your mission. So all of a sudden I was out of the church. I didn't have a great purpose and I was atheist and I thought, well, after I die, I'm dead and that's about it. Nobody will remember me really. And it was kind of a depressing sort of realization, but is what I believe. And so I still wanted to do something important that was satisfying and that I felt would be fulfilling. And so that's kind of what I'm doing on that blog. I started it in April as well, and it's called The Weekend Philanthropist. I work a full-time job, so I just do philanthropy on the weekend. Arrived at that catchy sort of title, but I have taken two trips to Nicaragua in 2012, just by myself the first time, and then with my fiance the second, and tried to experience poverty in a wide array of ways, and interviewed local philanthropists here in Austin to see what they do and what kind of impact they have, to try to find what I would like to do eventually, something that I think I believe in enough that I can focus on it for a lifetime. And it's been great. Came up, have made a lot of good friends and developed a more mature view of philanthropy and within the limitations of what we can do, and with a more of a cultural respect than I had when I was growing up, of valuing the cultures that are being approached. And so anyway, I finally arrived at the first nonprofit I'm going to start, and I'm really excited for that. But that's been really fun.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I really hope the audience will find your blog, The Accidental Atheist, right. But we'll find this one, The Weekend Philanthropist, because it really is a great idea, really, for everybody to think about if there's something that may even be small that we can start doing now, instead of waiting, you know? And yeah. So even to me, it was an inspiration.
Yeah, there are just so many things that you can do, and it's inspiring to see all these people here in Austin that are doing a variety of things for their own reasons. And it's and having benefited from a lot of programs like these when I was growing up, like, for example, Big Brothers Big Sisters and children education things and stuff, it's fun to think about the ways that we were affected growing up and then to turn around and try to think of a way to give that to other people as well.
Yeah. Well, carry on.
Will do.
And Nathan, so do you have more to say about what did you bring from your Mormonism and you've already described by your passion for these issues, but do you have more to say about that? Where you see yourself today with things like your spirituality and your morality and your concern for humanity and how your early upbringing within Mormonism kind of is impacting that?
There's some of the things that just I took away from the church, and this is one of the things that I always mention to my family members anytime they're frustrated with how often I talk about these things, is that the missionary effort, you know, it was something I picked up on quickly at a very young age in the church, and used, you know, to benefit the church for so many years, teaching people, inviting friends. I developed that behavior of not being afraid to talk about things, especially religion, with people close to me and with even strangers. You know, I even had in a recent work training, a week I had training for work, I were having a get-together with some of the other employees, and I brought religion up very early on, and all of them said, I don't talk about that. I usually don't talk about that. And it really surprised me. And so that's probably the biggest thing I've taken away is just that I've always wanted to share the ideas that I feel are going to benefit the most people. And it just happens that now my stance is that equality is one of the most pressing issues right now, and I want to be as active as I can in sharing that. And when you couple that, you know, just with all the teachings in the church about Christ-like behavior and, you know, reaching out to the poor and the afflicted and kind of the underdogs and those that are being persecuted, it's kind of something that I think, you know, even while I was in the church, I noticed that it was kind of lost on a lot of the membership, the fact that the story of Jesus when he was here, he preferred the company of the sick. He preferred to talk with them and discuss things with them. And he wasn't closing himself off to discussion with only people that agreed with him. And I just hope that I'll always hold on to that, and that I'll, those two things, that I'll continue to talk about things and continue to be willing to talk with people that don't agree with me and reach out to them.
Well, you guys, I sure appreciate your taking the afternoon and being willing to share your stories. I want to give you one more chance to bear your testimony, as it may be. That's kind of a tradition. You've basically done it, but I just want to really make sure that you've had a chance to tie everything together and to give any closing remarks. So do each of you want to take one more chance to say what's on your mind?
Yeah, sure. This will be interesting to do. I haven't done something like this for a while, but I guess I'll just... My overarching hope with all this kind of stuff that we do on talking about homosexuality and about post-Mormonism or about whatever else is to build understanding between people who otherwise have barriers between them. Real barriers in conversation and relationships, and I think the world is a better place when we're openly discussing things in a respectful way, and have just really enjoyed the conversations that I've had with some family members about that. And I am grateful to be at the spot where I'm at in life and for the kind of full circle that our family has done, and just glad to be here.
Amen.
Yeah, and I guess my testimony, or just my current belief system, is just that life is beautiful and incredibly short. And I regret sincerely, you know, any time I wasted holding back the love that I felt for other people because I was judging them, or I didn't understand their views or their positions. And I would just hope that the listeners and, you know, everybody that any of us are able to come in contact with would kind of get that feeling, just that life is something to be cherished, you know, whether you're coming from the religious standpoint or not. It is such a short time, and there's just no room for a lot of the pain that's been caused. And each of us just have such a big responsibility to continually improve our perspectives and reach out to all of those around us. And I hope we'll all do that.
Thank you. Well, I sure appreciate it, you guys. I'm excited to have you share this story with a lot of people. And I think it is really inspiring where you've come to and how you've managed these things. And I really am happy for both of your parents to have two sons like you, and I think your sisters must also be amazing. And that, you know, I have talked to your father, and he said, you know, that he just really, really values his children, and it's been such a joy in his life to have a richer connection with them that has come from you guys reaching adulthood and coming to where you have. And so I'm excited. I'm sure your family is going to appreciate hearing your story, even though they know a lot of this. I think it'll be nice for them to hear it this way. And I think it might be nice for you to hear you know, like you said, you're looking forward to hearing your mother and father tell their story to a third person. But, you know, once again, you know all that stuff, but I think you're going to enjoy it a lot. So I'm really excited to get that done and to be able to share this broader story with more people. And so I thank you very much, and I really hope that I have a chance to talk to you all soon and hang out. Maybe I'll come join you for Gay Pride in Austin.
Thank you so much for allowing us to, and for everything that you're doing. We really look forward to seeing everything that comes through Gay Mormon Stories.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson.
Thou didst them rise.